The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Now, as we heard yesterday, the whole country is at level two of this new five-level plan for the country in dealing with COVID-19. Except Dublin is at two and a bit. It's not at three yet. It might get there, and we discuss that at the moment. But just Priscilla Lynch, clinical editor with the Medical Independent, if level two means that all of the restrictions that had been in place continue in place unchanged, just clarify, please, what extra bits apply to Dublin at present?
Well, in Dublin, people living there can meet up to six other visitors to their house, but it has to be from one other household as opposed to up to three households. They're also being asked to limit their travel outside the county, and wet pubs are remaining closed. So those are kind of the main restrictions that are currently there in place. But then if they move up to level three, weddings, currently 50 guests can attend a wedding reception, but that would move down to 25 guests, and people in Dublin would be asked not to have any social or family gatherings outside of literally meeting one other household, limited to six. And there would be other restrictions then on sporting events and you know, funerals and whatnot. So, and there would also be closure of restaurants and other businesses. So it would be
so
quite
just,
a step
just clarify this, closure of restaurants. So the restaurants or even the pubs that have reopened as restaurants, would they go back to the way it was 4 months ago when they would maybe be doing delivery service but couldn't allow anybody in to actually sit and eat in the restaurant or the pub serving food?
Yeah, sorry to clarify that. So it would be additional restrictions on indoor dining, which they would probably, you know, outline depending on the area. So there would be additional restrictions on meeting other people, on indoor venues, on matches, on meeting people, on weddings and whatnot. So there would be a raft of other restrictions put in place if Dublin does move to level three.
But sorry, are those clear in the level three document that was put out yesterday, exactly what happens? Or does some of that still remain to be determined?
Some of them do remain to be determined, but there is a lot of detail actually in the document. I know it can sound confusing for people who are listening, but if they do log on to gov.ie and pull up the roadmap essentially and the different alert, you know, the alerts from 1 to 5, you will see the restrictions that come in place at which each level. So there are more restrictions in level 3 which are outlined, and some of them are a little vague that they would need further clarity on.
Now, why might Dublin go to level 3? What is the situation in relation to Dublin at present?
Well, Dublin, the number of cases there has been increasing steadily over the last number of weeks. Yesterday, out of a total of 357 cases in the country, there was 218 of those in Dublin, and had a high number of cases over the last week. So the 14-day incident rate across the country has increased in Ireland, and it's now 51.5 per 100,000, but it's actually double that in Dublin alone. So it's 104 per 100,000 at the incidence right there. So it has increased dramatically, and Dr. Ronan Lynn, the acting chief medical officer, warned that we could see an increase in cases in Dublin, daily cases, to 300 by the end of the month if the current trajectory continues. So they are concerned, obviously, about that, and the restrictions that we just discussed there have been put in place, as well as extra testing for people to come forward to be tested. So they see that as key to obviously trying to reduce the numbers there. A lot of people who have been picking up the virus in Dublin have been in the younger age bracket, so that has meant less people being hospitalised and less deaths. But that number is changing slightly. So there's slightly less people over the age of 45 being diagnosed with the virus now, including in Dublin and in other areas. So that is causing concern. We have seen a steady increase in the amount of people being hospitalised with the virus as well. Currently, there's 65 people in hospital and there's 14 in ICU. So that is pretty low compared to the peak in April and May, but it has been quite a slow and steady increase.
Okay, well, let me go to Professor Sam McConkie, infectious disease specialist at the Royal College of Surgeons, University of Medicine and Health Sciences. Sam, even if it was 300 people a month, if the numbers going to hospital are relatively low and the numbers going to ICU are relatively low, would that justify an increase in the restrictions for this capital city?
Hi, Matt. Good afternoon. The concern is not just the number of 300 or 200. It's the rate of change of that number. And unfortunately, we can all see over the last 2 months that number has gradually been going up. So if it goes to 300 by the end of September, at the rate of current growth, that will then become 400 and 500 and continue to go up. So if we don't have some control of that number's change, it's still a problem. The number's
but
not
does
the problem
that matter,
itself,
Sam?
In fact, it's a,
does that
it does,
matter
because if you get
if,
10,000 people, there is a limit. If you get to huge numbers of people, then inevitably deaths will occur on a big scale.
Okay, because what I was going to ask you is that there is at the moment a perception that maybe of many of the cases are asymptomatic, although Stephen Donnelly, the health minister on this programme yesterday, suggested that only one in five is asymptomatic. Yeah. But you also have, if it's happening in young people, it doesn't seem to be a particularly serious illness which requires hospitalisation or ICU care. And is there a trade-off that has to be done because that we can't keep the economy shut on a long-term basis or working on a reduced level if we don't have a serious issue of being unable to cope with this in our hospitals?
Yeah, I think the economy will be much better off the less sick people there are and the less young people there are getting it and the less old people are getting it. So I don't see that there's one against the other. The countries that have been hit very badly by COVID-19, like New York and Milan, you know, were devastated with no restrictions at all at the time it hit them, and their economy was devastated. So this narrative that we're hearing from some business communities that if we just let it all run through us, our business is completely false, Matt, I'm sorry to say. Sweden, as we know, who've taken a more lazy version, have actually a bigger decrease in the GDP than Norway or Finland, their nearest Scandinavian neighbours. So this idea that it's the restrictions causing the economic damage rather than the virus and the illness and ill health and death and fear and disability and chaos due to the virus, I think is simply wrong.
Actually, just as you mentioned Sweden, it is interesting because a lot of people are holding up Sweden as a template. We should do things the way they did it. But that seems to ignore the fact that they've had an awful lot more sick people and an awful lot more deaths than all their Nordic neighbours.
That's true, but not only that, Matt, the Swedes are very cooperative people who work together in community. And when their government recommends that they stay at home and only socialise with their own immediate family members, they more or less do it. So when you look at the travel in cars in Sweden and its change over the last 3 or 6 months, it's been very similar drop to other countries around. So the Swedes are sort of doing voluntarily what the rest of us have had more, let's say, mandatory orders to do.
And they also have an enormous number of people who live on their own. And yet, despite the fact that they haven't clustered, they still have a higher rate of infection because of their behaviour than other Nordic countries.
Yeah, so I think it's great to learn from other countries and see how they've done it. And when you see voluntary cooperation of the Swedish people doing their own personal decisions about staying socially spaced, then that's showing us that we as individuals here in Ireland, and especially in Dublin, could make those same choices. Rather than necessarily meeting six people from two different families, maybe we can stay with socialising with, you know, the people we live with for a while, as we did, and find ways of enjoying life, find creative ways of enjoying life that don't involve a lot of intimate, close indoor activity with people in other families. So I think that's the challenge, is to be creative and find those things that we enjoy. Whether it is our, you know, some people say it's Netflix box sets, but we've exhausted those. Then as somebody else said, they're watching gardening YouTube videos on how to trim petunias in the evenings rather than Netflix box sets, which lets you know you're addicted to gardening once you're watching YouTube. How to prune petunias.
Things haven't got that bad yet. I want to bring in Graham McQueen, Head of Communications with Dublin Chamber. Lots of messages coming in, Graham. There's things like listeners want to know. A lot of schools have rearranged communions for October. Would these be cancelled again if Dublin went to phase three? Is it the case that restaurants will have to be closed if Dublin goes to phase three? Graham, how clear is it to Dublin Chamber as to what happens if Dublin is nominated for level three?
I think some things are more clear than others. As was said there, it's unclear what would happen to a restaurant, for example. What we're told is there will be additional restrictions. What that looks like in practice, we're not too sure. But I think
that is a problem, isn't it? If yesterday's roadmap was supposed to provide clarity, and here you are as a representative for business in Dublin, and it's not clear exactly what happens if Dublin is moved to level three.
Absolutely, it's an issue. And remember, these are businesses that have been working really, really hard at great expense to get back open again and to get back up and running. You know, there's lots of cafes, restaurants, retailers all around the city who are sitting there today who've invested big amounts of money to get open again. They don't know as it stands what's going to happen to them. So it's frustrating for them. And I think there's an added frustration because they don't really understand a lot of the time the rationale why lockdown measures are being introduced. I think we felt that in the chamber, a lot of complaints from businesses 3-4 weeks ago when the additional lockdown measures were added in. they were scratching their heads a little bit, saying, why is this being brought in? Because in the business community, they're playing their part. They're trying to do everything they can to open safely. But then they were told, things aren't working. We've got to go back a stage. But I think there's a big piece of communication required there to explain exactly why these changes are required. Businesses will keep playing their part, but they need that bit of information.
Is there also a difficulty that not all parts of Dublin are the same, that there are perhaps clusters where there are issues and then other parts of Dublin where they're perhaps as safe as rural Ireland?
Absolutely, yeah. Like you look at the map of where the cases are, and it is it's all over the place, really. I mean, you look at a place like Howth, for example. There's very few cases there. There's 10,000 people live in Howth, even within certain districts. You look at one side of Blanchardstown, it's quite high. You look on the other, it's quite low. So, you know, to lock down the whole of Dublin to introduce these blanket measures, we think in the chamber that it'd be quite a blunt move to do that. We think it would put a lot of pressure on lots of different businesses. So hopefully we don't get to that. I think we need to get to the stage where we're using the numbers, we're using the stats, which are all available to us, to be a bit smarter about how we're doing things. I think businesses want to see that. Businesses want to see the working rather than just being told that this is the way it's going to happen.
Back to you on that, Sam McConkie. Should Dublin be treated as a single unit if you have considerable variations in the transmission of the disease in particular parts of it?
Yeah, I would advocate that and have encouraged that. That Dublin, because it's, you know, 1.4 million people, it's too big to be one unit. Now, economically, it functions as one unit because many of us travel across boundaries from, you know, one parish to another. So that makes restriction of travel, you know, to go to work or to go home difficult. Secondly, a lot of people don't know which local area they're in. The question is, what unit do you use? You could use parishes. You could use Dublin North, Bay North, the electoral constituency win, but there's also these electoral districts. So it's quite challenging to subdivide up a county into, you know, 10 or 15 different units when people don't know which one they're in. But fortunately, we all now know which county we're from, and everyone knows which county they live in. And even when you travel, you know when you're going into County Kildare. So we have a very strong county identity is sort of built into us as Irish people. But within Dublin, we're less parochial within Dublin. So I could see it being challenging, but I do think it will help. And I would suggest the areas that have no cases, if there are small areas of Dublin that have no cases, then perhaps if people stay within those areas, then they could have business as usual. So this is an idea of green zones where you have safe areas to work and live and function where there's zero cases, but they essentially are walled off and don't allow people in and out except to other green zones. It's the same as the green list idea travelling around Europe. And if we'd some parts of Dublin with none, perhaps they could safely go to green areas of Sligo, you know, where there's very few cases as well. So I do believe that differentiating between different communities would also allow local business leaders and community groups and parishes and local government leaders to take a leadership role in saying, right, lads and ladies, we're all in trouble here. There's a lot of cases. What can we do on our street, in our parish, to try and control this for now so that we protect the older people who might get it and die.
Priscilla Lynch, to finish with you, clinical editor of the Medical Independent. What are the key meetings coming up, and when are we likely to hear a decision in relation to Dublin?
Well, NPHET are meeting tomorrow, so we should definitely get some more information following tomorrow's meeting. We're going to be hearing a briefing as well this evening from NPHET, so I'm sure many questions will be asked there. It'll be interesting as well to see what Dr. Ronan Lynn says about foreign travel, because we know that now there's going to be a new green list according to what's happening across Europe. And the Taoiseach yesterday indicated that people could begin to resume a non-essential travel, but we'll have to see what NPHET says about that, because up to now they've clearly been saying all non-essential travel should be avoided. We also have a key meeting with the HSE tomorrow. They're going to have their operations briefing, and we need to have that document published, the HSE winter plan. So that will be key to seeing how our health services are going to manage COVID-19 and other health services, and keeping them all open as far as possible throughout the winter. So they're the main meetings, and obviously the Dáil subcommittee on COVID as well meets regularly, and now we're going to have this new oversight committee as well being put together to look at the decisions that are going to be made.
Priscilla Lynch, Graeme McQueen of Dublin Chamber, and Professor Sam McConkie, thank you all for joining us. Listener wants to know, why are the off-licences open? We need to stop the house parties. Maybe we do need to stop house parties, but surely the people who are responsible in their behaviour, who want to have a drink at home with their own family members or one other family coming in, surely they shouldn't be deprived of their enjoyment of a drink. 0874100102 gives you the last word by text or by WhatsApp. And a lot of people saying, well, why are you complaining about Dublin? Didn't this happen to Kildare, Laois and Offaly? I suppose the point is, Dublin does have 1.4 million people, a multiple of the number of people who were affected in those three counties.
The last word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.